Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hooray, hooray, hooray. Step right up. Get your place in line for the very, very thin price of nothing at all. You too can enter the tent of horrors and gaze at the freak that therein lie beyond. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Moran Monday comes but once a week. And this is that once of the week that it comes, okay? Yeah. It is. It's Moran Monday on the horn, but this time I guess there's a little bit of an indictment for me in Moran Monday, because apparently I'm one of the Morans. And you may be too. Sorry. Because I was under the impression, legitimately held, that Joe Lieberman was only a senator, only a single member of a 100-person body. I was not under the impression that, which appears to be reality, that he is actually Almighty God of all of us. That he has the power, in fact, literally, of life and death over us. What a bunch of morons we are, huh? A little frustrating. A little bit. If you don't know what that to which I allude, it would be the fact that Holy Joe Lieberman, Senator Droopy, as it were.
I don't think that you miserable plebs deserve any health insurance.
Has declared that he will, by God, filibuster any health insurance reform bill that has a public option or even a Medicare buy-in in it. Wow. I guess he just told Barack Obama where to get off. That one. I guess Holy Joe just told Barack Obama exactly what he thinks of having, you know, one of those Shvatza in the White House. I don't know. I don't know, John. How does that droopy dog MF-er get to have so much sway? Oof. Oh, God. Joe Lieberman. Oh. But it does no good. I beg the sky god for a big old lightning bolt that would just bzzzt. Didn't happen. And we're the morons. And you know, we're the morons of Moran Monday in more ways than one. I offer you, as a matter of fact, I offer you this explanation, a very recent one, as a matter of fact, from the White House. Sit down. You're not going to like this. Today,
that rag of dubious provenance, Politico, reported that the White House is pressuring... Huh? Wait, whose side are they on? What is pressuring Spineless Harry Reid to, quote-unquote, cut a deal with Holy Joe Lieberman? And that that deal would involve dropping any public option or Medicare buy-in from the bill in order to win Holy Joe's support. The White House then issued a statement saying the report is inaccurate. How about that? Now, we pay attention to the language around here, don't we? The report is inaccurate is a distinctly different statement from the report is incorrect or the report is wrong. The quote is, the report is inaccurate. The White House is not pushing Senator Reid in any direction. See, we're dealing with Washingtonians. And as such, we must be most mindful of the use of language. Because it's a big difference between coming out and saying the report is accurate, is inaccurate. The White House is not pushing Senator Reid in any direction. And coming out and saying... That's a damn lie. Big man, there's a gap between the, between those two that you can drive a truck through. Right? Yeah. So we get the report is inaccurate. The White House is not pushing Senator Reid in any direction. And here's my sense of why that is not an untruthful statement. Have you ever tried to push Jell-O? Have you ever tried to push goo? The more you push, the more it gives. The more you push, the more it caves. So I'm sure the White House isn't pushing Senator Harry Reid. He's unpushable. You can't push something. Push an oyster! You can't push an oyster! You push the oyster, and the oyster just sort of gives in, and it surrounds back around your finger, just like Jell-O. So, later on, Robert Gibbs gave his press briefing, and, well, just, again, you know, this is all haiku. Listen, this is the music that happens in the silences between the notes. Pay attention now.
Robert, has the president picked up the phone and called Joe Lieberman about health care reform?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
What do you consider that? Is the report true?
Okay, that's an important one. Not that I'm aware of, no. Now, that's not to say that he hasn't. That's just to say that Robert Gibbs is not aware of him having done so. Okay? Language. It's language is so important.
That is published on Politico that the White House is encouraging Senator Reid to sit down and make a deal with Lieberman and give up on the Medicare expansion.
I can only say this, Anna. The president is anxious to see progress and will continue to work with Democrats and Republicans and independents and everyone in between. To make that progress, to take those steps.
Wait a minute. Now, I've got the transcription of that answer here. Now, we're not going to pull the grandmother Kincaid thing and whip out the blackboard and diagram that sentence because we'd all lose our minds. I can only say this, Anna, that the president is anxious to see progress. Okay? Define progress. You know what I mean? And we'll continue to work with Democrats and Republicans And someone in the audience says, and independence. And Gibbs says, and independence. And everyone in between to make that progress and take those steps. What the hell does that mean, everyone in between? How many anarcho-syndicalist members of the United States Senate are there? How many communist members of the Senate are there? How many national socialist members of the Senate are there? Baggers need not answer that question. They think that everyone is. But, I mean, that's too much gobbledygook by half, isn't it? Let's go back.
And independence, and everyone in between, to make that progress, to take those steps.
Is this a serious problem with Senator Lieberman? Would the president get involved?
Well, the president's been involved. We wouldn't be sitting here the 14th of December, when you'd much rather be Christmas shopping, discussing the Senate being in on the weekends if the president wasn't involved. The president's been involved the whole time.
Okay, pardon me while I get a little sick. Now, this is a video moment, but it is kind of cute. Robert Gibbs looks down at his left wrist to find out exactly what day of the week it is when he says, we wouldn't be sitting here. Actually, he doesn't say you. The transcript is wrong in that regard. You wouldn't be sitting here, looks at watch, 14th of December. You'd much rather be Christmas shopping. The president's been involved the whole time. Yeah, a lot of us would rather be Christmas shopping, Mr. Gibbs. Let me see. I think I've got an example of someone who would much rather be Christmas shopping. This will only take a minute because I've got her right here. Oh, here she is. Jacqueline Kelly would probably much rather be Christmas shopping. This from NJ.com, NewJersey.com. News from Hudson County. Melissa Hayes of the Jersey Journal reporting. Jacqueline Kelly. Just to let Mr. Gibbs know, would very much rather be Christmas shopping. She can't be Christmas shopping, though, because she's dead. She died today. She died today. Suffering all the way to the end. From the effects of ovarian cancer and emphysema. She had no health insurance. Here's how that worked out. Jacqueline Kelly spent her life in service to her children and her grandchildren. She was what we call a stay-at-home mom. She raised 6 children. Then she helped to raise her grandchildren. All while her husband, John Kelly, busted his ass for 50 years as a truck driver. When her husband John retired, he got to go on Medicare. But Mrs. Kelly wasn't old enough. Remember, she died today, She was 61. When he retired and went on Medicare, there was no private insurance for Mrs. Kelly. And she was also told that because of the fact that she had never, and the moms in the audience are going to throw something at a wall, so if you're sitting around them, duck. She was also told that because she had never worked in her life, that she was not entitled to Social Security disability, which would have afforded her health care. This is one of those stories that I dare not share with Agnes, because she would have broken something, and it might have been in me. So they went to the New Jersey Department of Welfare. And because Mr. Kelly, John Kelly, had a pension of sorts, Mr. and Mrs. Kelly were told that they were far too wealthy for Jacqueline Kelly to receive any sort of benefits. What treatment they could get for Jacqueline Kelly, with her insides ravaged by ovarian cancer, they paid for out of pocket, and paid and paid and paid, and there was some write-off as charity from a local hospital. The $4,000 they received through fundraisers to assist with medical costs recently are now instead going to pay for her funeral. She received treatment at home from an outfit called Compassionate Care Hospice. They covered the cost of her hospice treatment through their foundation. Sandra Kelly is one of Jacqueline Kelly's daughters, and she said simply and eloquently, "It was very sad that we had to go through this, and we thank all those who donated to help my dad." You'll forgive me, but I think that smacks of traditional family values. You know, the kind that we're supposed to have, right? The kind that's really important, according to our betters of the socially conservative stripe, often known as Repiglicans, or conservative Democrats, or blue dogs, or baggers and birthers and tenthers and deathers. I wonder if anyone has bothered to tell Holy Joe Lieberman about Jacqueline Kelly, aged 61 and still too young for Medicare, though now she lies dead. I wonder if Holy Joe is aware of the people that he is condemning a grim and anguished death. I only wonder. But I don't wonder. I know. I know that Holy Joe Lieberman lives in his own little world where he is deafened by the jingling sounds of the 30 pieces of silver. Actually, more like 917,000 pieces of silver that he receives from the insurance industry to betray working Americans to a cruel fate. He is stone deaf to the needs of the American people. He is immoral to a point of being sickening. But there's a lot of non-denial denials in the White House statement. Is the report true that's published on Politico that the White House is encouraging Senator Reid to sit down and make a deal with Lieberman and give up on the Medicare expansion? Answer: I can only say this, Anna, that the president is anxious to see progress. If you've got it handy, whip out your old and dog-eared copy of All the President's Men by Woodward and Bernstein and look up the phrase non-denial denial. Because that's one. But Jacqueline Kelly is just one of approximately 45,000 Americans per year, conservatively estimated, that Holy Joe Lieberman is willing to condemn to death. At this point, I have no trouble saying whatsoever that Holy Joe Lieberman is a sociopath. Because he is utterly without conscience in any form. He can hear the hue and cry of his masters in the insurance industry, but he is stone deaf to the needs of folks like the Kelly family. What does that say about the way that America still looks at the job of child care and child raising? What does it say that a woman who has done nothing with her life save for successfully raise to adulthood 6 human beings and help raise several more grandchildren, that she is deemed as a function of governmental delineation and designation to never have worked a day in her life? Just sat around eating bonbons, I suppose, and occasionally looking up and saying, "Max, I'm ready for my close-up." You know, there's work to be done in this country, and that's one of the things we have to do. We absolutely have to correct the notion that the only thing that qualifies as work in this country is the work that one does for financial remuneration. Because there's tons of work out there that doesn't pay. Not that doesn't pay well, that doesn't pay at all. There are people who volunteer at shelters and missions. The time spent helping to run a little league or being a member of the PTO at a middle school or some such, that is serious work, but is deemed by virtue of the fact that no holy prophet was attached to it to have not been work at all. a statement by the government, in essence, that whatever a person did, if they were not financially compensated for it, it did not matter. And in saying that the work did not matter, it is no stretch at all to understand that the further statement is that the person did not matter. And in oh so many ways, Jacqueline Kelly and the 44,999 others like her, at least where Joseph Lieberman is concerned, did not matter. So that's where we begin Moran Monday, with us. But don't worry, there are in fact a lot of other Morans who aren't us, and we will find them through the course of the program, I assure you. For now, however, let's go to the phones.
Hey.
Well, hey, Juanita.
I have a quote here for you.
Okie dokie.
The Antichrist is alive, walking around somewhere, and is a male Jew. That's by Jerry Falwell.
I was going to say, that just had to be Jerry Falwell.
I'm so sick of Joe Lieberman.
I am too.
Sick of the Democrats letting him be too.
I mean, how hard? Juanita, let's just take a quick look. How hard would it be? Understanding, of course, that one would have to have a spine to pull something like this off. How hard would it be to, if you're Harry Reid, to call Joe Lieberman in and say, Joe, buddy, how you doing? You really, really like that Homeland Security chairmanship you've got, don't you, Joe?
Why, yes, I'm rather fond of it.
Well, listen, you little... I'm going to pull that chairmanship from you, and you're not going to chair jack squat.
Yes.
If you so much as burp that you might filibuster health care. Now, you can get in line and march with the rest of us, or you can, you know, lose it. Which do you want, Joe? But you see, again, that's beyond Harry Reid's capabilities.
Lord of mercy.
Because remember, he said,
I'm not going to force anybody. I'm just going to encourage people.
Well, I'm so sick. This thing could have been solved months ago if we hadn't had all this bipartisan. We were so bipartisan with Bush, that's one thing that's wrong with this country. It's a big deal because they were, what do you call it, enablers. Our party was enablers.
Yeah. Yeah. And we continue to enable.
And
I know there are, I saw a post on Facebook today, Juanita, from, I believe, Howie Klein saying, scrap it all and come back with a Medicare buy-in for everybody over 50.
You know what? I was thinking the same thing. Why can't that just be done? I think it could have been done months ago. And, shoot, I would even allow the president to say, hey, this is a mandate. I'm declaring a mandate. We're not going to vote on this. We're going to help our people out.
You know, do it and use budget reconciliation, and then all that 60-vote nonsense goes right out the window.
Right.
And I know, and understand, Juanita, that I understand, I comprehend, as do we all, that there are risks inherent with that, such as what Lottie pointed out on the show the other night, that, you know, the insurance companies will be happy as a clam, because it will take the sick people off of their rolls and put them on Medicare.
Yeah.
But you know, the fact of the matter is, at this point in time, I have to be concerned, or I feel like, as a human being, I have to be concerned about the Jacqueline Kellys of the world.
Yeah. It's
And we've got to get coverage to people.
And there's yin and yang to everything in this life. There's nothing perfect. We're not going to get nothing perfect. But I would just like it to be taken. Take it away from the insurance companies. They've got no business being involved. They've got no business being involved whatsoever.
I'm all for strangling them.
And me too.
Yeah, financially speaking, I mean, I'm not.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know,
oh,
I don't want any, I don't want anybody going after any any insurance company CEOs with the piano wire or anything. I am for financially strangling the insurance industry at this point.
I'm wondering who made Joe Lieberman king of the world. I mean, please, I'm just so tired of that guy.
Who made him president? Who made? That's the point. That's the point I got started with, Juanita. Who made him president?
Right. He's using more power, especially more power than Obama or any of them. I'm tired of this guy. And he's going to be in there, what, another 6 years?
No, he was up in 2006. He'll be there till 12.
But you know what? I wish that they would take that away from him, because I remember the first day he got back on it. He said, oh, this feels so good. I just wish they would take that away from him and take him out of our caucus.
I don't, you know, when, what's that old saying? When you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas?
Yeah.
Isn't that us right now? I mean,
well, yeah, well,
are,
yeah,
are,
in line now with worse than fleas, worse than dogs. I mean, it's, you know, that would even be somebody that, animal that would be kind and all, but you share it with his fleas with you.
At least in common, we got.
But I can't even think of an animal that I would insult.
I know.
These people are, and then you listen to them. No matter what it is, they're against it. Like they come up now with, they wanted something to help people out with the mortgages, and it would involve a bankruptcy. Oh no, we can't have that. Can't have that. Can't have this. Can't have that. And it's just disgusting. Anyhow.
I know.
But the thing. Joe Lieberman again.
I know. But the thing, you know, the thing is, Juanita, with the process called budget reconciliation, Joe Lieberman doesn't matter. They could have used budget reconciliation months ago if they really wanted to solve this problem.
They say now it's too late.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I mean, like the guy said, who'd you say, Friedman? To scrap it?
Howie Klein.
Howie Klein. There's still a good thing about that. Just let everybody that doesn't have it, give them the opportunity to have Medicare, and we'll start from there. But do it right away. Have it declared. Because our country, people are suffering really bad. And it's going to get worse, I mean, if we don't do something about all this evil healthcare system we have, these insurance companies. You know, when I was a little girl, that we didn't have insurance. Maybe people did. I don't know. You either paid to go to the hospital or you didn't go, or they let you pay on time. But I don't know. And we did have county hospital, too, a long time ago.
Right.
They did away with that a few years ago. We finally got, it was a whole lot better in many of the hospitals. You were treated decently and everything. And the commissioners decided to do away with it. Gone with the wind. And another thing is they can do something. I mean, look at Roosevelt's. Have these WPA jobs. There's all kinds. You know, the Black Caucus is they're coming together, you know, the ones in the Congress, you know, and saying, listen, you got to help people out. They had a press meeting today.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that. Did you see that?
I did not see it. I read of it.
Yeah. They said this has got to stop. And so this is something that will help everybody. A lot of people don't realize if you help a certain group of people who are more depressed than anybody, distressed than anybody, you're going to help everyone. But, you know, growing up in the South, I know that we had it rough, but I know that the black people had it a whole lot rougher just because they were black. You know?
Yes.
Just because, and for no other reason. And now they've got this idea that if we get rid of all the gays, our country's going to be perfect, I suppose. That's what they think. So I don't know. But it is a mess.
Well, you know, I've got an email in from our pal Cindy, who the subject line is, the president two-faced or what? And she notes, as protests against bank bonuses erupt on Wall Street, President Barack Obama tells CEOs that he won't let their lobbyists thwart financial reform. And she says, the president won't let bank lobbyists thwart financial reform, but he lets lobbyists thwart health care reform, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's time to engage. It's time to get bust out a little Harry Truman here, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
If the bully pulpit of the presidency is not sufficient to speak up for the Jacqueline Kellys of the world,
right,
Juanita, what the heck good is it for?
Right. And he could maybe outpass Roosevelt, if he would just do some of the things in a different ways that Roosevelt did, take some of his bold steps. And I'm not saying he hasn't done nothing, and I know that we're better off without those other people. But I'm telling you, if they don't change, it's going to be those other people again, and it's going to be worse. Like you said before, we think Bush was the worst, but...
There's another one out there. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Sarah Palin, congratulations.
Right. Well.
Yeah, I saw a little a cartoon depiction the other day that I think I'm on board with. It showed President Obama driving a tank with the Nobel Peace Prize around the barrel of the tank.
That was rather ironic, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then another one that showed Sarah Palin standing there with her book and a little medal hanging around her neck that says Nobel Prize for Literature. And I say, what the heck? Why not?
Well, the way everything is, it just gets crazier and crazier. Could very well happen. She has a guy that's going around saying it's the greatest piece of literature.
Yes, and he's very well paid.
Okay.
You know, I was in our local Kroger the other day, and you know, there's a significant space in that store that's dedicated to paperbacks and hardback books and things like that. At least for a big grocery store, it seems significant.
Yeah.
And there must have been 24 copies of that hateful book. And I just stood there with my little mouth hanging open, catching flies, Juanita, thinking, you know, some innocent shopper is going to come through here, desperate for a Christmas present. And they're going to think, you know, she's pretty. I think I'll get my friend over there at the church social committee a copy of this book because, you know, Sarah's a real good Christian lady.
Uh huh.
And you know that's how disasters are. You know, disasters are not created generally by one big event. That they happen a little
one
little thing, another little thing, and the next thing, you know, some big things happened.
Yeah, it's like people like us, we're seeing this going on, and other people don't realize. And these people that think that things are going to disaster now, they don't know they've been living in disaster
Yes.
At least they
yes.
do.
You have said that so much. I've been trying to say that for a couple of weeks, and you just said it in a couple of seconds so much better than I've tried to say it. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, I sure do appreciate you sort of stepping up and saying, there's not a lot that we as just the American people out there can do in between elections. But one of the few decent things that we can do is since our elected betters don't, the least that we can do is to remember and reverence and honor all the hard work that went into the life of a lady like Jacqueline Kelly.
Yeah.
Because our politicians will not mourn us, not you, not me, not anyone else, because we never gave them any money, really.
Mm-hmm.
We never did much for them. All we did was put them in office. And so when our time comes, we will not be remembered. But the thing that you and I and the rest of us can do is we can at least honor what we know was a life that was lived as a struggle, but that contained ever so much joy and whose end was met bravely, but was met without any sort of so much as a give a hoot from the likes of Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, you know, I saw this weekend, I saw a documentary about Carlton Pearson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, it probably had been on before, you know, about his different way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you say you had him on your show one time?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It was one of the most fascinating conversations we ever had. Yeah.
And I was listening to it. Now, there's certain things I don't think I can agree with it, but it doesn't mean I'm right and he's wrong, you know, about like, yeah, Hitler's in heaven, but, you know. But anyway, he was talking about how he got healed from the hurt. And it was by these people that it was the mostly gay church where mm-hmm. they washed his feet. And I thought, you know, I met him years ago.
Really?
And I had, they were like the group. He was with Oral Roberts University. He was a singer. And I thought, oh, these people are just going to be so wonderful and sweet. He was the only one. He was so special. He was so nice and kind. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a lot of respect for him.
Oh yes, oh yes, and I hope he's continuing to do well because when he announced his break with traditional hate-filled fundamentalist doctrine, yeah. They did everything but call for his death.
And you know they told him he's going to hell and he was surprised. He thought they would be glad to hear it, I guess, but no, but you know he had to be special. To have that light turned on for him. And like I say, I don't agree with him 100%. But like I say, that doesn't mean I'm right and he's wrong. He could very well be completely right.
Well, you know, that's the thing about religion. It's kind of a crapshoot. I mean...
He said, you know, that the religion, it kills. It destroys people.
Yes.
He thought his
and remember, you know, one of the things that that sort of flows from what you know what I understand of him is that we have to understand that if, for instance, there are 1,000 religions on the planet, every one of us are atheists with regard to at least 999 of them.
Yeah, in their opinion, is that what you mean?
Right, because every religion says that it is the way.
Yeah, I saw a movie last night. It was a Danish movie made in 1955, and I happened upon it. And I watched it like 4 something this morning. It had the title. It was called Ordet, which means the word, and was just amazingly wonderful. It won the best film, foreign film, at the Academy that year. and if anybody's ever heard of it, it was based on a play that was written back in the 30s by a Lutheran minister, and he in Denmark, and he was spoke out. He thought Hitler was good at first, you know, because he had organized Germany, but it didn't take him long to catch up. I looked all this up. It did take him long, and of course, eventually he spoke out, and he got killed by the Gestapo. So it fits in with a lot of that. It was based on a person in the family that had been brain injured, and he thought he was Christ. But almost everything he said was so truthful, but they rejected it because his father rejected it because he said, well, he's crazy. But who was crazy? Who is crazy and who's not? But it was, to me, it was just absolutely amazing. It was hard to read, you know, to have to read the words.
Yeah, it's tough to read a movie.
Yeah, but I got into it. And I would love to see the whole thing. And it's ORDET, if anybody's interested.
I will start getting emails any minute now giving me the complete lowdown of the film. You know how it goes around here.
Yeah.
Juanita, have a wonderful evening.
You
Thank
too.
You so much for sharing your thoughts.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And a quick trip to the mailbag. You know, I never know when I share a story what sort of impact it's going to have. Maura has written in from New Jersey. The subject line of her email is, I hate Joe Lieberman. Bob. Isn't it amazing that a man who claims to be religious goes against all that is good and right? Mrs. Kelly's story truly hits me at home. She lived a few blocks from me and was treated at the hospital that always takes care of me. Oh. Of course, I'm not in the least surprised that someone who claims to be a follower of religion is blind, deaf, and dumb to the tenets of that religion. Joe, and let's be clear, I don't think that Joe Lieberman is any more a follower of the truths of Judaism than I thought that Jerry Falwell was a follower of the truths propounded by Yeshua, by Jesus Christ, or that, for instance, Osama bin Laden is or was a follower of Muhammad. Not even a little bit. This in from Jude. Bob, possibly the Horn family would find it from within to call, email, or write Joe Lieberman and personally state how we individually feel and think about hearing of the death of Mrs. Kelly, even though we may not have known her. We know, all caps, we know of her existence here in America. Indeed, a beautiful idea. Marty writing in, and Marty has a bit of a cynical streak, I fear. Remember, Bob, this is America you're talking about. Unless someone's being screwed over, you may change out screwed for effed. It just ain't American. You know, there's some idiot teabagger applauding Mrs. Kelly's death, saying she should have bought insurance anyway, you know, without money. Remember the woman fan of GW's who said she worked 3 jobs and seemed happy about doing it, and the applause at GW saying that she was uniquely American? And with regard to the fact that our existences are little noted by our elected representatives, Marty adds, but with precious few exceptions, like those of us listening to the horn. People don't realize they're in a disaster until someone on the tube tells them. Then they start trying to understand how they got there. And, you know, that really is the problem. When you are up to your ass in alligators is a bad time to think about the wisdom of entering the swamp. But Marty's right. That is, for the most part, where we are. And, of course, Cindy notes, who made Joe Lieberman so powerful? Harry Reid made Joe Lieberman so powerful. How true. How true. Apparently, Ed Schultz has a poll on his website. Senator Joe Lieberman stated that he'll oppose a health care bill that includes a proposal to expand Medicare to people as young as 55. What should Senate Democrats do with Lieberman? Answer one, hit him where it hurts. Senator Harry Reid should strip Lieberman of his chairmanship of the Homeland Security Committee for his continued defection. That's 25%. 7% say respect his right to dissent and work towards a compromise that satisfies Lieberman and his big insurance backers. 7% say that, really. I'd love to know that 7%. That's the 7% of insurance executives who watch Ed Schultz's show. And then finally, at 68%, adopt a scorched earth policy. Throw him out of the Senate Democratic caucus, take away his chairmanships, and recruit a candidate to beat him in 2012. Cindy notes, as you can see, not many people like old Joe. Took a long time for the anger to reach crescendo, or has it? I've hated this jerk for years. I think he cost President Al Gore a lot of support. He's a liar, a Mossad agent within our own government. I don't know that Mossad part to be the truth or a fact, but he certainly does vote like it now, doesn't he? So that's the mailbag. And if you want to reach the program, you know it's easy. Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. That's the email. If you want to dial in, it's toll-free 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on. And if you've got some sort of long-distance dialing plan that doesn't cost you anything to call us, you can save us a nickel or a buck or two by dialing 304-658-3333, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up, brother?
Oh, nothing much. All I need to see is say three words whenever you think Barack, at least four words, with Barack Obama and him going easy on these guys. Chicago School of Economics.
Yeah, that's okay. Four words. Yep.
Chicago School of Economics. And don't forget, these guys were, you know, buttering his biscuit when people were like, Obama who?
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that.
You know, so it's like, you have to understand. This.
Yeah, otherwise known, and by the way, otherwise known as Milton Friedman U.
Yeah. And he was a professor to that. It was his steady paycheck when he was busy being an activist.
Professor of constitutional law, was he not?
Yeah. So, you know, he's beholden to, and the way those guys are funded, I know he's beholden to somebody somewhere somehow.
All politicians are they not?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I say until we get, like, public financing of campaigns, you know, regardless of how well-intentioned they are, and believe you me, you know, I still back them 100%, but I understand. You know, you got to sell your soul a little bit. You know. Like he said, you know, it's one thing to sit out here and be an armchair general and say, I would never do this. But once you're in the arena fighting, you know, you got to face the realities of being in that arena. You know?
Yes. I don't disagree in the least. I mean, I recognize, I try to be a realist about politics. I know that sooner or later, with very few exceptions, and I know whose name I will bring up as one of those exceptions.
Kucinich?
Yeah. With very few exceptions, it is impossible to do major politics in America without compromising oneself.
Oh, yeah. And the sad thing is, Kucinich is probably the best politician this country has ever produced in our time, and the national media makes him look like a joke.
But the joke's on us, right?
Huh?
But the joke's on us.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, until we get the public financing, you know, unfortunately, that's what he's going to end up being.
And I just got an email in from Marty saying, if you want to see who he's answering to, Google the name Penny Pritzker. And, of course, and I did, and Penny Sue Pritzker, born 1959, is an American business executive and a member of the Pritzker family of Chicago, one of America's wealthiest business families. She is the founder and current chair of Classic Residence by Hyatt, a chain of luxury senior living communities spreading throughout the United States, and the national finance chair of Barack Obama's presidential campaign. In 2009, the Forbes 400 list of America's wealthiest showed her as the 204th richest person in the U.S., estimated net worth $1.7 billion U.S. Also in 2009, Forbes listed her as the world's 647th richest person with net worth of about $1.1 billion. On November 20th, 2008, CNN reported that Pritzker was Barack Obama's top choice for Commerce Secretary, quoting multiple unnamed sources. However, it was later reported that because of her involvement in the failure of subprime lender Superior Bank, Pritzker took herself out of the running.
Wow. Okay.
She's the daughter of Donald N. Pritzker, co-founder of the Hyatt Hotel chain, and she attended, Castelleja School until 1977, earned a B.A. in economics from Harvard, and a J.D. MBA from Stanford, and she lives in the Lincoln Park neighborhood of Chicago with her two teenage children and her husband, Dr. Brian Traubert.
Okay, there you go. There you go. But, you know, I'm just saying...
Oh, but wait, you're going to love this part. I'm sorry, I'm just doing this on the fly, Kevin, not trying to interrupt. Pritzker contributed some $493,174 to numerous campaigns and political action committees since the 2000 election cycle. Among the recipients have been the presidential campaign and exploratory committees, including those of George W. Bush, Joe Lieberman, Bill Bradley, Rudy Giuliani, John McCain, Al Gore, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
I mean, you know, that's called hedging your bets.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what most of the wealthy does in this country, and this is why, you know, until we get public financing, you know, it's going to be Tweedledum, you know. There goes the old boss saying it's the new boss or something along those lines. You know, that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sad thing that, and I tell you, I don't call him Lieberman anymore. I call him Emperor Palpatine. Okay? You know, because it seems like every time he exercises power, he ages even more now. And I'm just waiting for him to wither away somehow, but I don't think he is. It's like he... And the thing is, I have a feeling he's going to get his third term because, you know what, Hartford, that community there, and that's where most of the votes are going to come from in Connecticut.
Sure.
Yeah, he's in the back pocket. Hartford is the insurance capital of the Northeast, you know.
So, I guess it's kind of, yeah, well, sure.
You know, so you can forget it. It's like... And as long as there's money to be donated, he's gonna get it. Unless we put up like a real strong, well, we had a real strong candidate candidate before. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. It's just a total sellout. You know? So,
and the question is there a remedy? Is there any kind of relief? Is there anything to be done, Kevin?
Campaign finance reform. That's the only thing. We know that's not going to happen. Put it this way. This country will get into another civil war over campaign finance reform. That's how big that would be.
Yeah.
It would be like another 9/11 proportion type incident. Because the way these people operate now, and I notice, if they don't have their way, they're going to destroy everything. And they're looking to do that now anyway. You know, it's sad. You know, it's like.
Well, so where healthcare is concerned, are you part of the contingent that says scrap it and come back with Medicare?
I'm with more like Tom Hartman, where it's kind of like we get what we can get, because you have to understand we got to play this hand like the Republicans played it. You know, the Republicans took the time and chipped little by little by little. And that's what we have to do by their playbook. And, you know, it's strange, you know, and we really need to start going by their playbook on a lot of things, you know. Take it little by little. Go for the victory now and then come back another day. I'll even take the, anybody who's 50 and older to get on Medicare at this point.
And you know, I understand the draw of something like that, Kevin, but there's something else every time we create something that has a cutoff line, we're going to have stories about people who die at 49 instead of 50.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing that just crawls all over me, like, you know, like a good waller in poison ivy. There is no demographic in this country that is worthy of being hung out not to dry, but to die.
Well, you know, that's the sad thing. Until we have universal Medicare, that's the cold, hard realities we're dealing with, you know. Again, this is what I say, and it all goes back to that, you know, divinely elect mentality. It's like, I don't know what it is with Southern fundamentalist Christians who believe they're not worthy of being treated humanely. I don't get it.
Sinners. You know, you take a few hundred years and you beat poor folks over the head with, "You are a sinner!" And suddenly you're not worthy.
Yeah, you know.
And your betters are out there dancing in the streets. God likes me better. I got lots of money. God likes me better. I got lots of money.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sorry to say, I don't mean to put down the South, but that's what I had to get out of that mentality, because, like, one of the arguments, and people who were very close to, and who, you know, I loved a lot, okay, was like, and you know the rest of the story, but, because I was like, I was like, you know, all I want is a job down here that gives health insurance. What is so difficult? What have you done to deserve health insurance? I'm like, excuse me?
Oh, and by the way, Kevin, I'm paying attention in the chat room too, and I just saw this. Our buddy Benedict at Large posted in the chat room in great big letters, so it would be impossible for me to miss. Hadassah Lieberman is taking money from the Susan Komen Foundation, which was established to fight cancer. And then Lottie notes, Rabbis protest Joe Lieberman. I almost missed this story. He says, The symbolism of seeing rabbis protest in this candlelight vigil seems pretty significant to me. Stamford, Connecticut, quietly holding candles, hundreds of clergymen, congregants, and reform advocates lined the sidewalks outside independent U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman's Stamford home Sunday night in a show of support for universal health care.
Oh.
You know, maybe if they'd bring some electronic voting machines with them. I don't know.
He definitely better not piss them off. But, you know, I have a feeling next election he's going to change his tune 250% because, God, you know, if we could get a couple more Democrats, he's going to do a Phil Spector. I mean, yeah, Phil Spector, right?
Who's he gonna shoot?
Oh no, not the Phil. The guy from Pennsylvania.
Arlen, yeah.
Arlen Spector.
Yeah, because I mean, Joe's creepy and stuff, but him with the Phil Spector hair was just too much, Kevin. You know, don't do that to me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Woo! You seen that mugshot? Yee!
Yeah. Ah! Ooh! Yeah, it looked like a melting box or something.
Exactly. Hey, Kevin, have a great evening, brother.
Okay, you too, bro.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye now.
Thanks.
We're a little bit past the top of the hour. Just a couple of things to pass on to you before maybe we move on from this loathsome topic about this loathsome human, well, person. This coming in from John Aravosis at America Blog, sort of reposting something from Huffington Post. Second source confirms Rahm Emanuel personally pressed Reid to cut deal with Lieberman. The story reads as follows. This from Ryan Grimm of HuffPost Reporting. Rahm Emanuel visited Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid in his Capitol office on Sunday evening and personally urged him. You know what it sounds like when Rahm Emanuel urges somebody. Listen, you miserable mother, son of a... that. Personally urged him to cut a deal with recalcitrant Senator Joe Lieberman, two Democratic sources familiar with the situation, said. Emanuel, President Obama's chief of staff, has long been identified as leading a faction of White House advisors who have been pushing the Senate simply to pass any health care bill, no matter how weak. His direct message to Reid, according to the source close to the negotiations, get it done, just get it done. And if you think there weren't a few other fun words in there, you don't know nothing about Rahm Emanuel. Meanwhile, this sort of puts a little bit of an interesting spin on the White House denial. Two sources close to the whole thing said that the Politico report of the arm twisting was entirely accurate. Quote, we're long past time for these kinds of games, one source said. White House spokesman Reid Cherlin stuck to the denial. Our statement is true. Now let's go back and review just for fun. What is it? What is it that was put out there? What's the quote? Question. Is the report true that's published on Politico that the White House is encouraging Senator Reid to sit down and make a deal with Lieberman and give up on the Medicare expansion? Robert Gibbs, answer. I can only say this, Anna, that the president is anxious to see progress. And we'll continue to work with Democrats and Republicans and independents and everyone in between to make that progress and take those steps. Wow, that's pretty cool. I get confirmed in a matter of minutes. The non-denial denial. Pay attention. Learn to... learn to identify a non-denial denial early on. By the way, this little update sent in by our blogger, Texas Betsy, who don't miss much. And Marty notes, well, there's your connection to the Mossad. Rahm, I think it's his father, is it not? Rahm's dad was part of the Irgun or something, wasn't he? And Rahm, wasn't Rahm himself a member of the IDF? One of these days we got to do something about politicians with dual citizenship. Yeah, remember, it was Rahm's dad who, when queried about whether an Obama administration would be Israel-friendly, said, of course it will be. I mean, that's Rahm. That's my son. He's going to be the chief of staff. It's not like he's going to be some sort of Arab scrubbing the floors. Right? Isn't that what was said? Yeah. That was what was said. This in from a listener by the name of A. Nani Moose. Let me get this straight. Going back to Mrs. Kelly. Let me get this straight. By virtue of the stay-at-home mom never entering the job market and never being underpaid as most are, she cut herself off from any support for those in her age range. Got it. That done to her by so many of the family values crowd. But now, those socialist pinko Euro folks, why, they think it's fine to offer up cradle-to-grave health care, bad-paying job, or no bad-paying job. Thus, a French woman, married and mother of two, feels the call to nurture, teach, and send well-shaped adults out into the world. She gets health care. But that mother of two in the U.S. that hasn't worked the shitty job, she gets squat for health care. And so we wonder, we actually wonder, why the American family looks like a floundering sick animal on a rocky seacoast. Mom hits the job market, or she dies on the hospital steps. Yeah, we wonder. You know, there's one little statistic that's tucked away down inside inside those notations of absolute fact, and that is this. The unemployment rate in Western Europe hovers somewhere around 20%. But of that 20%, very few, if any, are starving. Of that 20%, precisely zero are going without health care or putting mason jars with taped-on Polaroid photographs at convenience store counters in the hopes of gathering nickels, pennies, dimes, quarters, the occasional $1 bill and $5 bill in hopes of getting mama some help. Doesn't happen in Europe. Meanwhile, we celebrate here and say, well, we've turned a corner, when the unemployment numbers dip from 10.2% to 10%. But we also recognize the entire time that that ain't reality. The reality is that our unemployment is the same as that of Europe. It's just that Europe counts all of theirs while we engage in a sort of dumb show or some sort of economic dishonest prestidigitation whereby we just disappear 10% of the entire population from our care or concerns. Meanwhile, none of those people in the United States, whether they are part of the 10% we acknowledge or the 10% that we don't, none of them get health care, and many of them go hungry. Now you tell me, governmentally, who is succeeding and who is failing. This in via a private message from the chat room. You know, Bob, since we don't pay for stay-at-home moms, it puts a whole new spin on the family values crowd calling for women to stay home. Doesn't it?
Why, yes.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it does. Stay home, get sick, die. God Almighty. But I suppose that is our lot, is it not? We are at a place where ever so many of us are simply invisible. Are simply invisible. To those whom we give power. Mrs. Kelly was invisible to Barack Obama, Rahm Emanuel, Joe Lieberman, Harry Reid. I imagine that there are some members of the United States Senate, Bernie Sanders comes to mind, who might be horrified to learn of the end of Mrs. Kelly's days. I have no doubt that Dennis Kucinich would be sickened by it and morally offended. But for the most part, no. For the most part, we are talking about elected representatives whose position renders them blind. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
And, of course, you know the number to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on, on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Easy, easy, easy. If you've never been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room, you oughta. It's free, it's simple, it's fun. There's a great crowd in there. Benny's in there, I'm in there. Chino Deb's in there, just popped in. Cobwebs is in there. The chat room Den Mother ELO is in there, as is John Fox, taking a break. Lottie, Pro Anti, Sparky Dunk, Sundog, TCBYS, Texas Betsy. It's, well, it's a Moran Monday party in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. And, of course, I try to monitor the chat room as well as we go along. You know, what the heck? Jump in. Have a blast. Sort of returning to our Moran Monday theme. from Marty. Cynical, Bob? Me? What makes you think that? Only your emails, Marty. Only your emails. Actually, you're not cynical. You are a member of the reality-based community. Maybe we sort of repurpose Moran Monday for just another minute or so from Moran Monday to what do they think we are Morans Monday? What do they think we are Morans Monday? I don't know if you've seen this, but I read the headline and I went, well, bust my buttons. Headline, 22 million missing Bush White House emails found. And you can go and read the story for yourself. They just popped up. You know, I guess they were in, I don't know, Laura's underwear drawer or something, and who the hell would want to look in there? Computer technicians have found 22 million missing White House emails from the administration of President George W. Bush, and the Obama administration is searching for dozens more days' worth of potentially lost email from the Bush years, according to two groups that filed suit over the failure by the Bush White House to install an electronic record-keeping system. Those two groups are, of course, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW, and the National Security Archive. And they announced today that they were settling the lawsuits that they had filed against the Executive Office of the President back in 2007. You remember the missing emails, right? It just sort of disappeared. And the Bush administration said, we called those guys that drive around those little Volkswagen Beetles. What do they call it? The Geek Squad? Yeah, we called the Geek Squad. And I mean, they said they couldn't find them, so I guess they're lost. Okay. But it turns out that the purloined, not lost, come on, purloined emails, were there all along. They were just mislabeled. Now, of course, former Bush White House spokescreep Scott Stanzel said that they'd already been, that those 22 million emails had already been recovered while Bush was still in office, and that misleading statements, reading from the AP story, misleading statements about the former administration's work demonstrate, quote, a continued anti-Bush agenda. Nearly a year after a new president was sworn in, the liberal group's CREW and National Security Archive litigate for sport, distort the facts, and have consistently tried to create a spooky conspiracy out of standard IT issues. Well, if they were found during the Bush administration, why the hell weren't they disclosed? I mean, I'm just saying. But Ann Wiseman is quite correct. She said that those so-called missing, purloined emails, quote, would never have been found but for our lawsuits and pressure from Capitol Hill. It was only then that they did this reanalysis and found as a result that there were 22 million emails that they were unable to account for before. Don't get your hopes up, by the way, because... we won't know a blessed thing about what's in them until at least 2014. And by that time, the Richard B. Dick, Big Time Cheney, may very well be some sort of cybernetic thing in orbit around the planet that no one can reach. Records released as a result of the lawsuits, however, reveal that the Bush White House was aware during the president's first term in office that the email system had serious archiving problems, which didn't become publicly known until 2006, when federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald disclosed them during his criminal investigation of the outing of CIA operative Valerie Plame. Now, this is the last paragraph of the story. A Microsoft Corporation document on the Bush White House's email problems states that Microsoft was called in to help find electronic messages in October 2003, more than 2 years before the problem surfaced publicly. October 2003 was the month that the Justice Department began gearing up its criminal investigation into who in the Bush administration leaked the identity of Plame, the wife of Bush administration war critic Joseph Wilson. But again, none of it's coming out until they have been dealt with in terms of presidential records, and released according to the required protocols. The government now can find and search 22 million more emails than it could in late 2005, and the settlement means that the Obama administration will restore 94, that's what the 22 million emails are, 94 calendar days of email from backup tape. According to former spokescreep Stanzel, the 94 days of emails to be recovered consist of 61 calendar days already planned in the Bush era and an additional 33 days of recovery that the Obama White House have agreed to recover as part of the settlement of the court case. Eesh. But again... they will not be released until something like 2014. And what is being claimed is that they were mislabeled. Yeah, really, they were mislabeled. you know, they were labeled George W. Bush Fantasy Football 2005, but actually it was 22 million emails, probably including patent evidence of criminal conduct. But or it had a little sticker on George W. Bush porn surfing, yeah, whatever. So, you know, it might be fun to sort of be around. And you know, when we finally get to look and go, what a dirty bastard he was. Oh, he knew all along. So there's that. What do they think we are, morons? But no, it is Moran Monday, and there are real morons out there for our consideration. You know, I was backing up just a second about the emails. I was talking with ELO Sue, and of the missing emails, she said, you know, it's a start. They're not as lost as they told us they were. Can't cover the oopsie anymore. I also think it ensures we'll have a neocon president in 2014 when they become public, so a preemptive Nixon-esque pardon can be issued. And see, that's where I disagree with Sue. I don't think it would take a right-wing president to issue that pardon. I personally don't think that Barack Obama would have 10 cents worth of qualms issuing a sort of preemptive pardon for George W. Bush. It's one thing to talk about what a rotten POS George W. Bush is. It's another thing to actually subject him to a process that might actually end in something approaching or vaguely resembling justice. But remember, if you recall our little historical digression of a couple of weeks back, the Bush family doesn't do justice. At least not when it's them being subjected to it. But no, not kidding. There really are moran. Yes, Virginia, there is a moran out there. And in particular, well, let's start with the miserable, racist, bigoted, prejudiced morans, because they've got a song now. Oh, yes, they do. This is from Human Events. It's a little Christmas carol that they posted on their website over the weekend. You remember the Christmas carol Feliz Navidad? Yeah, I do too. Well, you know, no message of goodwill exists that cannot be perverted into something sick and twisted by the right wing, and hence we offer you just as a reminder of what kind of scum we're dealing with here, the Human Events version.
Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Throw them some pesos and they work so hard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. I don't even ask if they got green card. They're gonna pave up my driveway this Christmas. They're gonna clean all my cars this Christmas. They're gonna shovel all the snow this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. They're gonna dig me a pool this Christmas. They're gonna landscape my lawn this Christmas. They're gonna cook me up some tacos this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. 16 arrive in a stolen car. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. When they're not working, they sit at the bar. They're gonna drink some cervezas this Christmas. They're gonna shoot some tequila this Christmas. They're gonna get DUIs this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard.
They're getting free organ transplants this Christmas. They're gonna have anchor babies this Christmas. They're gonna scream si se puede this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. One at a time, run past those border guards. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Hugo Chavez sends his kind regards. They're gonna tackle Pat Buchanan this Christmas. They're gonna chase down Lou Dobbs this Christmas. They're gonna join up with La Raza this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. They're gonna spread bubonic plague this Christmas. They're gonna bring me lots of bedbugs this Christmas. They're gonna pass tuberculosis this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard.
Ho, 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 I don't care who you are, that's funny.
I'll bet that's the number one Christmas song on the website over at the Savage Nation. But no, it's not the Savage Nation. That's not where this comes from. It comes from a pair of creeps. A pair of absolute scum-sucking bottom feeders by the names of Matt Fox, sorry, John, and A.J. Rice. And they've got something out there that I guess goes out onto professional terrestrial radio somewhere called the Fox and Rice Experience. And they are carried by Talk Radio Network. Yeah. This is for-profit radio. And you know, it's not like these guys are new to this kind of hate. Kind of embarrassed to point this out to you, but yeah, there's certainly undocumented aliens are not the only target of their hatred, because this isn't parody. This is outright hatred. Here you go.
We take you now to the Democratic National Convention and ask, what happens when procreation goes horribly wrong?
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, sweetie! You are unbelievable.
Is Reverend Wright with you?
Thank you. You also look very cute.
Thank you! Daddy, next time I see you, I'm going to give you a big fist bump.
That's Sasha.
Daddy, who are those white people sitting next to you?
They've just been wonderful hosts.
I'm going to P. Diddy's champagne after party, Daddy.
I'll see you guys on Thursday, all right? Love you guys.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Daddy. I love you. Assalamu alaikum, my brother.
When procreation goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, so much for pro-birthright wingers. When procreation goes horribly wrong. This is the kind of stuff that birthers and baggers and deathers and tenthers and boogers think is terribly, terribly funny. Mocking a child. You know, we're not talking about some drunken 20-year-old rolling around a bar floor somewhere in Austin with a cigarette between two fingers and a long neck Budweiser in the other that she's too young to purchase. No. We're talking about a child. We're talking about a little one. We're talking about a baby. But the hatred that is reserved for that man of darker skin in the White House knows no bounds of taste or decency. welcome to professional radio. Welcome to radio that is propped up by right-wing corporations to make sure that the hate is always there for anyone who wants to access it. Cindy says, illegals in my yard. I don't think many Hispanics would like that song. Try playing that on the West Coast and they'll plan a march around your station. Why not find out where these creeps broadcast from and go march around it regardless of where it is? I'm sorry, Marty. Please play the real one after this. I'd like my brain cleaned out of this. Marty, I don't have the real one. I don't have an extensive collection of Christmas music. Wait a minute. Hold on. Just let me check. I might, but no guarantee. You know what? If this qualifies as the real one, good, because this is an awesome one. And, yeah, we will clean your ears out of this, because relatively long, long time ago, our music consultant, David in Tennessee, decided that I was in need of some Christmas music I might not otherwise have. And I got this, and this is awesome. This is just wonderful. This isn't a parody. This really is Feliz Navidad, but it's Feliz Navidad like you have never, ever heard before. I hope. God, I loves me some punk. Makes me feel all better and clean and stuff. I'll have to at some point when that's just magnificent. ELO. That's Horn Pepto Bismol, all right. God, punk special. We're going to the phones just in a moment here, but I want to share a couple of emails with you that sort of come in here and there. First, from Jude, who suggested an email or a phone call to Lieberman's office. Jude is forever thinking of how we connect and how we communicate what we connect, when we connect. Her spirit is very, very good. And she says, on reflecting about the letting Lieberman know our feelings and thoughts, literally our feelings and thoughts, it should be done via a phone call. Joe Lieberman's office personnel must be required to hear our voices with our inflections, our tone, our emotions. Reminds me of the day I called the offices of Representatives Bachman, Boner, Cantor, and others, voicing from the perspective of a retired hospice nurse how some of my former families felt viewing the large poster of piled-up bodies from the Holocaust. I released it all to the women who answered the phones. They were quiet, reflective in dealing with me. The process of coming as close and personal as possible, as you well know, Bob, is always the most effective. One may never know what type of change occurs as the person having to listen is left with the residual of those calls from us. It is doing one's part, never ignoring what seems hopeless or ineffective. Simply not our call. We are called to the process of action individually. Peace, she says. Thank you, Jude. And this from William, in reference to my assertion that many of us simply become invisible to our elected representatives. William says, my brother became one of the invisible ones. He was the youngest of the four siblings in my family. 4 months after he was diagnosed with inoperable liver cancer and radiation treatments that were shrinking the golf ball-sized tumor, he was told there was nothing more they could do and sent off to a hospice. To this day, I cannot imagine him hearing the words, there is nothing more we can do. We spoke every day as he said, I'm going to beat this thing. My last call to him was in the hospice where he could only make motorboat sounds, and he died a few hours later. His hospice stay was 3 days. This was the 11th of June, 2001. He was 47. It was not that they could not do more. It was that his HMO year capped out. He became invisible. All he had was given out, and all he was became a memory. And for what? Money. Money. And it's hard to... It's hard to live through any one of those. But if there is any consolation, and there isn't, you know, I watch this whole thing unfold, and I realize that I think part of the reason that it gnaws at me so grossly is because my second eldest sister was one of those invisibles. She was poor. She had, living in Alabama, she had absolutely zero access to any health care whatsoever. You know, Alabama-stan. And one morning, she looked at her beloved and said, I don't feel so good. And she went upstairs and got in the tub and died at about maybe 61 years of age. Her heart simply gave out, and she became one of the invisible. And we have an abundance of invisible, an overabundance, a surfeit of invisible in this country. And the question remains whether we are willing as a people to tolerate that some significant portion of our selves are invisible. Not invisible by definition, but invisible, but rendered invisible by processes created by miserable, godless, soulless, motherless, right-wing punks and thugs. Are we willing to tolerate Holy Joe Lieberman rendering thousands of us invisible every year? I can't answer that question. I can answer it, but only for myself. I can't answer it for you. It's something that you must contemplate in your own private place and reach a conclusion. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Hey, Jethro.
I'm having another one of them dilemmas.
You got you a dilemma?
I got too many dilemmas. I got too many choices. I mean, I got, I can choose from hate-mongering, fear-mongering, war-mongering, revolution, racism.
There's just too much mongering going on.
And then I got the harlot mongering. I can watch watch interviews with every one of Tiger Woods' call girl buddies. Well, how did you and Tiger meet? Well, I really loved him, and I knew he was married, but I'm a hoe. I was worried about Tiger and his family, but you're a hoe. I don't get it. Is it because Tiger's black and he's popular and they can't destroy Obama yet? Is Tiger the whipping boy here?
You know what? I hadn't considered it from that angle, Jethro, but that makes an abundance of sense. We gonna get us somebody brown.
I mean, you know, when it's Good Morning America, whatever, Matt Lauer's on and Mayor's somebody. You know, they did two different interviews and different hours with one of the hoes. I was really in love with him, but you a hoe. So I just I have never seen it on TV before. You're interviewing these they used to call them party girls, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's sort of a perverse reversal of the whole Washington slept here kind of concept, right?
Yeah. And sure they marketed Tiger, and sure he had a reputation as being liking the ladies. So what? You know, it's his business, not mine. So I don't see the focus on that. So much focus on that. It's just madness, buddy.
It's madness in all caps.
And speaking of morons, did you read the thing about this world-renowned photographer being roughed up down in the...
Yeah, oh man, am I glad you brought this up.
Charleston Mall.
Yeah, and he's not a... Now, it's kind of important to note, Jethro, he's not a photographer, he is a videographer, okay? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A world-renowned, award-winning, something darn near approaching Pulitzer status.
One of them professionals.
Yeah. But he was off the clock. And you can tell he was off the clock because he was using one of them little bitty pissant cameras, right?
Right.
And he was taking pictures inside the Charleston Town Center Mall when he got roughed up by the cops.
Yeah. Well, he was taking pictures of a choir And this is how all this fear-mongering and all this Glenn Beck stuff, everybody is so paranoid and so suspicious, and, you know, this, you know, catching all these predators. They think everybody's out. He was taking pictures, and two men approached him about a few minutes later and demanded that he delete the pictures of these young girls. So...
I guess he got a picture of a little girl sitting on Santa's lap.
Yeah, something like that, in a public place. So, he deleted them right in front of these two overly concerned, paranoid parents. So the next thing you know, that wasn't good enough for the parents. They go in and tell the cops something. The next thing you know, the cops up there going, what are you doing taking pictures of them little girls? So he says, well, I'll take a picture of you. And then that's when the lines start to blur.
Yeah, well, that's when the cop puts his hand up to the camera to knock the camera to the ground and destroy it, and the guy bats the cop's hand away. The cop was not on duty. And this all took place, within a week or so ago at the Charleston Town Center Mall in Charleston, West Virginia. And the cop then put him to the ground, damn near broke his arm behind him.
Right, put him in the hammer lock and told him, and the guy was telling him it would dislocate, and
I got a bad shoulder. You're about to dislocate it. Please don't dislocate my shoulder.
And he said, well, if it dislocates, we'll call Jan Care. We'll call the ambulance. So, yeah, it looks like a big lawsuit that's going to happen.
Yeah, off-duty cop who's moonlighting as a rent-a-cop for the mall security.
Yeah, well, but they let them, and they've had trouble there before with this double-dipping. They've had two big trials, and they're letting them wear their uniform and their gun and stuff, and the line between what a mall cop can do and what, the off-duty cop that suddenly becomes on-duty, so he can arrest this guy on some chump charges, and, it's not good.
No, and it's funny, the spokeswoman for the mall said, typical patrons of the mall are welcome to take photographs. And that's where she stepped in it, because the guy was not on duty. And he's not and that's why I made a point, Jethro, of noting the guy's not a photographer. He is a videographer. And there's a big difference between the two.
Right. And there's another suit. Some guy was taking pictures of the state police or something at the courthouse building there in Charleston. And one police car was straddling two handicapped spots. And they came over and arrested that guy and roughed him up. So, it's, I guess the police don't like having your picture taken. But the point out is, in a democracy, the police need to, to act the way that the public wants them to. They need to be, accountable to the public. And this, but in a police state, you have to adjust your actions to suit the police.
Absolutely, and that's part of it. It is a police state. When you see these guys in their riot gear and stuff, there's no more name on the uniform, and the badge numbers are covered up if there's a badge.
Oh yeah, well I saw one at the mountaintop removal rally there. Had the big greens on and looked all militaried up, and didn't say West Virginia Police, State Police had special ops on it.
Yeah.
I was going, special ops? What's he doing down here? Of course, I don't know what they thought was going to. At least they didn't have the automatic weapons.
Well, I was going to say, if you recall the June 23rd rally down at Marsh Fork, I don't know if you were there or not, Jethro, but there were snipers on the roof of Marsh Fork Elementary for that one.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, we're a bunch of peaceniks. I don't know. Maybe they would have come in handy if one of the MTR violence brigade had started shooting.
I hear you.
But then again, I don't care how good a sniper you are. I'm not crazy about the notion of shooting into crowds.
I hear you. So, yeah, it's just madness. I'll tell you what. So, I was reading Maureen Dowd's column over the weekend.
Yeah, she hates everybody.
Yeah, well, she, her column was pretty much, you know, our puppets aren't what they used to be. Because she had accompanied Gates over to Iraq and Afghanistan. And where they were pretty much dictating the terms to Gates, because they know no matter how much they did or whatever they do, we're stuck spending billions of dollars no matter what. We're in there and we're stuck, and they know it. So it's and you know they were saying, you know, Obama saying we're going to get out of Afghanistan in 2011, and Karzai stood right there and said, you know, it's going to be 15 or 20 years before we're even going to think about being able to have our own police and our own army and stuff.
Yeah. I got a feeling we're there for a while.
Yeah, she was saying, yeah, because, you know, if you want to take your average Afghanistani, you have to teach them how to read and write before you can start, you know, having him arrest people and charge them with stuff. And so then they go to, and then Gates finds out, he has a big revelation that the Taliban is paying men $250, $300 a day to fight for them. And they only had the Afghani army paying them $120 a day.
Oops, we're losing a bidding war.
So they raised it to $240.
Wait. They're getting paid $250 and we raised it to $240?
Right.
Apparently Secretary Gates has never been to an auction.
The American way, buddy.
I got 230. Who'll give me 240? Who'll give me 240? 228. No! You know,
those guys are just going cha-ching, cha-ching. So then he's in Iraq or something. He wasn't meeting with Maliki, but he was meeting with some prime minister or something. And they were having some kind of a big legislative deal. He was in front of their parliament or something answering why they had all these big bomb attacks there a couple of days ago that killed all these people. And I mean, you know, the really super big one killed a couple hundred people and injured, I don't know how many. So he was answering for that, and he kind of stood Gates up. But then when he returned, he was checking Gates out and talking, and in public he said, well, you know, you look pretty young here in person. He said, on TV and stuff, you look much older.
You know what was kind of surprising? You know, I'm kind of a college football geek. So I sat down to watch the Army-Navy game this past Saturday. And lo and behold, Gates had made it back for that.
Hmm.
They had the big fuel-wasting thing where they flew some Osprey troop transports over the field. And, you know, it's a twin-engined airplane that has rotating engines that turn it into a helicopter. The only problem is that for years and years and years, they'd test the thing, and when they tried to turn it into a helicopter, it turned into a doorstop.
Suicide mission.
Yeah, just testing an airplane, mind you.
Yeah. Yeah, they had several crashes and had men killed and stuff, and they still pushed, you know, that's just shows you the power of the military-industrial complex. They can push those programs and get those billions of dollars in on junk.
Yeah, and as soon as the clueless CBS announcers said, and here come the Ospreys, I was, please don't let it crash. Please don't let it crash. Please don't let it crash. I mean, it's worse than the Chick-fil-A cows parachuting into the football stadium.
Yeah, yeah. But this guy basically, you know, in Iraqi terms, he basically humiliated Gates by telling him, you know, that he looked much younger in person than he did because he looked much older, you know, as he'd seen him on TV and stuff. So that whole deal over there is a mess, and I don't know. The ballyhoo, the big Army-Navy game, I just, I don't know where we're headed. And you're on the, there's so many people who still insist, it's the same thing that happened when Clinton took over, you know, years ago. Clinton and the UN are going to take your guns. The UN is going to take over.
Oh,
you
know, God, I know.
They're going to ruin the Constitution. They're going to take your guns.
Those men in the blue helmets will be right there on Main Street.
And I'm telling these people, you don't, you ain't never been to West Virginia now, have you? I said, they ain't going to take nobody's guess. I said, it's culture here. You know, it's culture.
Yeah, we ain't kidding about that whole cold dead fingers part.
Yeah. If you're not armed with the teeth, you're not a West Virginian. When you're born in West Virginia, you know, the delivery doctor slaps you on the hind end, and then hands you a 12-gauge pump, you know, so.
Well, I guess I had one that was a little more kid-friendly. He handed mine a 410, but, you know. You know, just because of the kick.
Yeah, so this business of somebody going to take over your guns and the United Nations and whoever, yeah, it just shows you how people can be manipulated in their thinking by just a constant stream of fear-mongering and propaganda, and it's amazing, actually. And unreal, it's just, you just wonder, are people, you know, under some kind of a hypnotic trance, or what are they sending out over TV and stuff, because, I don't know, it's like mass hypnotism or something.
I think you're getting very, very, very close to the truth, Jethro. We don't have to even go into the trance anymore. It's just the hypnosis of things. It's the big lie theory. Just repeat it and over and over and over and over and louder and louder and louder and louder, and pretty soon it turns into the truth.
You know, it's like the Morlocks are in control now.
And, yeah.
We're the Eloi or whatever, you know, the Eloi, I think. The Elohim or something. You know, we're now the prey, and we've been beaten down so much, you know, when the horn and the and these things sound, the horn sounds, and the Eloi start walking zombie-like, you know, to their own doom. That's us. Human lemmings. Without even a thought. Then the door shuts, and you don't get taken, and... Yeah, you go back to the same deal until the horn sounds again. I don't see how we have gotten to this point.
It would take us the rest of the program, Jethro, but I think I do. I mean, it's media.
Yeah, well, media and corporate greed and, you know, the machine and the rich it's more like feudalism. You know, our profits, our work, you know, we have a place to live, and we have a few basic necessities.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that email that I had earlier from the anonymous listener that said, you know, let's compare the two. A woman spends her life raising children in France, and she's got all of her health care attended to. A woman spends her life raising her children in the United States, and she dies a miserable death without health care.
Right. And you have people, you know, you have people who will just swear up and down and hee-haw and just do everything to say that we've got the best health care in the world. And we are way down, you know. Our infant mortality rate is the pits. We're in the pits in a lot of areas. Yeah, we've got some specialty care. If you've got the big bucks and these specialists are just elitist doctors, yeah, you can come for that care if you've got the money. But it shouldn't be like that. That's not the whole intent of the Hippocratic Oath and the whole deal anyway. And even, you know, that just shows you how depraved and how materialistic we are and away from our, you know, our spiritual nature by everything being a business and the healing arts becoming a business, a money-making, the hospitals are profit-oriented and it's, they become mills.
Mills. Yeah.
It's outrageous.
It's so pervasive. I mean, this is a great place to bring this up, Jethro. I think you've got a Facebook page, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, lots of us do. And you know, there are those little games out there. There's
Bodinian.
Yes. Bodinian. Exactly.
Yeah.
There are these little Facebook games like Mafia Wars, and there's a game where you're a farmer, and you don't buy stuff for it by, you know, ponying up bucks. You buy stuff for it by participating with advertisers. who then give you the virtual money to, like, you know, buy your mafia machine gun, that kind of thing, right?
Right, I mean, right.
Okay. Well, it turns out that there is that one of those AstroTurf bunches is offering virtual Facebook dollars in exchange for people clicking a link and then sending sending letters to their elected representatives telling them they don't want health care reform.
Mm.
You know, that shouldn't... I mean, it's one thing to get somebody to click a link and look at the new McDonald's burger. It's another thing to get people to click a link and then actively work against their own best interests.
Right, right. Well, yeah, it's a bait and switch. You get them clicking all this mindless stuff and all these applications that you... I mean, there's millions of applications on Facebook. And, you know, send the happy heart, send the Merry Christmas, send the Christmas ornaments, and then you allow them to get all of your information, and it's crazy. And then you get used to just click, click, click. But, you know, same thing with the mafia wars. It's basically, you know, you're thinking you're getting something, but all you're doing is clicking.
Yeah.
Click, click, click. Well, now, you know, I got $3 million. Click, click, click. Oh, okay, I was off to somebody. Click, click, click. Hey, I got a 32 Roadster. Hey, it's fantasy land. Yeah, you know. And
but then again, a fantasy land is what people whose realities are so dadgum grim, Jethro, are desperately in search of.
Oh yeah, and it gets you used to, you know. Yeah, how many kills do you have? You know, put somebody on the hit list. It kind of smooths over death. And this latest video game, Modern Warfare, Call of Duty, what number?
4, I think.
It's in Russia, and they've got a episode in there where you are a member of a team, and you go in and you start gunning down a crowd of civilians inside an airport. I mean, you just, every one of them.
Man, and we thought Grand Theft Auto was bad.
Yeah. And so it's
well, but look at, you know, look at some of the, and wow, I'm so not going to go Hillary Clinton and get all worked up about video games, but, you know, there's another, Assassin's Creed. and, you know, I mean, I'll say that I've played these things and they're kind of fun.
Yes.
But if you, If you're not awake and aware of what's going on, that you are being anesthetized to the concept of killing and slaughter, then perhaps there are some aspects of it that are dangerous. I mean, we didn't like it very much, did we, when they put out Left Behind Jesus Brigade or whatever it was. Remember that thing? That was the one where you were proselytizing for Jesus in the end times, and you recharged your gun by shooting the queers.
That's not funny, but just, I mean, it's so outrageous. It's just so crazy. The things that, the illusion that we are presented and just spoon-fed.
Well, you know, I drove over to Beckley yesterday just to sit down and have a little talk time with Dr. Bill, who's doing well, by the way.
Good.
He really misses being on the horn, but at any rate, I took my son with me, and you've met my son. And we were talking along the way. He's actually, and I'm really proud of him, being as how he is an adolescent, almost 14-year-old boy. He's taking a real interest in these things called books. And I something dawned on me, because every now and then I have to remind myself that I was his age once upon a time. It's a function of what happens to you, Jethro, when your geezer gene kicks in.
I hear you.
But I have to remember that I was his age one time, and it dawned on me, you know, the first time that I ever read Kurt Vonnegut, I was his age.
He's good. He's ready for it. He's ready for Slaughterhouse-Five and the whole deal.
Sirens of Titan and Breakfast of Champions and God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. So, you know, and if you're like me, for me, Vonnegut books are the equivalent of, like, Bruce Springsteen albums in music.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, you might buy it once, you'll buy it again, you'll buy it because they're constantly being borrowed forever or taken by the girlfriend or, you know, but you wind up going, oh, where'd that go? Oh, I got to buy it again. So I got to go out and get my hands on the Vonnegut Library again so I can turn my kids onto it.
Cool. Yeah, that would be good.
Oh, yeah, and I'm reminded that Left Behind Eternal Forces, that's what it was, Left Behind Eternal Forces, that you also got points in that game for converting the Jews.
Now, was that Tim LaHaye creation there? Or?
Yeah, that was the video game that came off of those miserable Tim LaHaye books.
Oh, yeah, the books, videos, and the video game. Whew, what a marketeer.
Oh, yeah, they made the trifecta, Jethro.
Talk about the changelenders in the temple. Yeah, I tell you what. Yeah, well, I don't know. Obama, I'm not sure about him. There's some things he can do, and obviously, I guess it doesn't matter who the president is. There's some things that they can't do. So you always hope for the best. I mean, I had real high hopes for Clinton, too, and those were kind of dashed on the rocks of despair. So.
Or the rocks of realpolitik. But you know what? I don't hate to say it. It's just I look back and I was doing it the other day, and those years of Clinton, you know, 93 to 2001, they were. I'm sure I'm going to get hate mail over this. They were pretty decent. You know, no wars in Afghanistan, no wars in Iraq. You know, yeah, we had the whole no-fly zone, starve the babies to death, kill a million children thing going on.
Right, and we had the Bosnia thing, which was really basically a manufactured deal to get the World Bank and the IMF and stuff in there, so they had to borrow money to rebuild and everything.
Right, you know, it's mob business.
Yeah, it's just like, so it doesn't matter who the president is now, some of these world-shaking events and our involvement in it are obviously being controlled by somebody else. I mean, Obama campaigned on doing this and that in Afghanistan, but he also campaigned on change, and he could have changed his mind. And this deal with McChrystal and all this other hooey, I just maybe he decided he would let the generals try it, you know, for a while, and then if they didn't work it out, then try to extract them. But it's going to be too late then. Another year and a half, and it's just going to be bad news.
And you know, we're on the verge of kissing goodbye this sorry year that we hope. And that's, you know, we used to say goodbye to the sorry years of the Bush administration, Jethro, and say, well, you know, we're 1 year closer to being done with that evil little clown. But this closing out this year may be actually, wow, what a bummer I am, worse.
Yeah.
Because this was a year that dawned with great hope. You know, great anticipation for correcting, for righting the ship of state, for correcting things that had been done horribly wrong. And I know that there are lists out there showing 91 things that Barack Obama has done, but I sure don't feel them.
Right. Well, the things for the people aren't being done. It's more the same song and dance. It's kind of like the moral of the you know, Rip Van Winkle deal there. You know, he's gone for 20 years, and the main street's not King George Street anymore. It's, you know, it's George Washington Street, and you know, things haven't changed. Just the names of them have. So.
Yeah.
And. But there's always hope. I mean, you know, you got to keep sawing wood. There's no giving up, because when you give up and you quit and you lose the fight, then you become the lemmings and the illy. And when the horn rings, you just, you know, about face and start heading through your own destruction. You gotta keep the fire going inside and just keep trucking and making a contribution. That's the only thing you can do is basically as an individual, and hope that snowballs into a group thing. and like-minded individuals. That's the only hope that we have, I think, and try to end this corporate deal, this machine of grinding the humans down. It's like the Matrix or something, you know. We've betrayed the machines too. Now they've, you know, but now they've taken over and they realize that we're, you know, like Agent Smith was telling Morpheus, you know, you guys are like a virus. You spread like some.
I know.
And then you just wonder, but that's one way of looking at it. I think there's hope for the humans. I think we're in an evolutionary cycle, and the future is going to be ours. But right now, we have to work for that future, and there's some, you know.
And that's precisely the point, Jethro. We can't sit around and wait for the good things to happen.
Right, because the materialistic forces, the darker forces, are you know, they're fighting hard as well. That's the basis of the Bhagavad Gita, where the two armies are getting ready to fight each other, and Krishna and Arjuna are there having the discussion, and Arjuna's breaking down because he looks over and the enemy is his cousins and stuff. But that's an allegory of basically the fight between, you know, the material and the spiritual nature. So you just got to keep fighting, heading for the light. I mean, the do-gooders will eventually win. And I think there's unseen forces that are on our side. It's not a sledgehammer blow, but it's subtle things. And
are you familiar, Jethro, with the TED website?
I don't think so.
I think this is just going to get all over you. TED is a conference that happens every year the videos are up at TED.org, TED.org, and it's just brilliant little snippets of ideas. No lecture longer than like 20 minutes or so. It's, you know, the subtitle is TED, Ideas Worth Spreading. It takes place every year in Monterey, California. And I watched one over the weekend that I think will really, really speak to you.
Cool.
If you go to TED.org, just search, use the search function, and just type in the name Devdutt, D-E-V-D-U-T-T. And I encourage everyone to watch this thing. It's just magnificent. Devdutt Patanayak, East versus West, The Myths That Mystify. And it's just, and also, how myths shape cultures. It's really, really, well worth, the 18 minutes or so of your finite life that you will spend, in viewing it.
I hear you. Well, actually, and things are changing too, because, the master was telling us that about 14,000 feet, you will find more Americans and Europeans up seeking masters than you do Indians now.
Well, right, because everything, you know, the commercialization, you know, it's not the commercialization. People complain about the commercialization of Christmas, Jethro. It's not the commercialization of Christmas that's the problem. It's the commercialization of religion, and that's nothing new. That's been going on since the Bishop of Rome declared himself to be the final word on stuff and therefore started, you know, sort of consolidating power, as it were. But there's something else at work there, you know, beyond the fact that it's not that our myth structure doesn't work for us, Jethro. It's that we don't have a myth structure. We have a superimposed myth structure. You know, I know this very well for myself, being a recovering Southern Baptist. You know, I was raised on the stories of a people for you know, whose story, you know, it's a wonderful book and everything, but it's not my culture.
Right.
It is another culture that is reinterpreted for particularized reasons and then superimposed upon yet another cultural group. I have no idea what my myth structure was as as a predominantly Scots-Irish person, because you know, long before there was a Roman Catholic Church, there was a Julius Caesar and a Claudius, and between the two of them, they wiped it out.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you got all kinds of fairy king Tuatha and all kinds of stories for the Scotch and the Irish. So it goes back. Certainly.
But it's not like they're told. It's not like they're accessible.
They've been told, but it's been told in secret. It's just like the masters. There are Himalayan masters. There's masters in Egypt. Native American masters. You tell the stuff in secret. You don't cast your pearls before swine. And the stuff's out there. I mean, it's hidden. You have to seek it yourself. That's the fire that burns in you that. You just get so sick of the bull jive, you start searching for true meaning, and I don't know. You go through some hardship and stuff, but if you stick in there and hang it out, you get some answers, and that just comes through study and experiencing life, and hopefully getting some revelations along the way. Even the hog finds some nuts occasionally. So
even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then.
That's right, rooting around. And your culture's, and basically in the long run, it's all, the myth and the archetypes and stuff, they all blend in together at a certain point. And a lot of those came from like an original myth, and they've been modified and changed for the various cultures and times. And I think, like I was saying before, we've been here a long time, and some of that mythology and stuff is, I think it's based on true things. It's just we're not in that paradigm anymore. And things have changed over millions and millions of years. Who knows? But there's a lot of unanswered questions out there, and the mythology we get now, it is based on keeping you confused and keeping the illusion going. The Bible, there's stories, but the mythology there, it is there, but there's a lot of hidden meaning. There are different layers.
Well, one of the things that I've a fairly recent discovery on my part is that when I read the stories of the Old Testament, rather than reading stories of venerated old ones, I keep looking at the Old Testament, especially like in Genesis and stuff, and I'm going, wow, these aren't stories of people to hold up as being great. These are cautionary tales of how not to live.
Exactly.
You got Abraham out there literally pimping his wife to Pharaoh. Oh, no, that's not my wife. That's my sister. And then Pharaoh, jumps Sarah's bones. And then, some plague descends on Egypt, and Pharaoh calls him over and says, why didn't you tell me that was your wife? the whole Joseph story. Joseph finally gets revenge on his brothers, remember?
Right.
And we're supposed to read that and think that that's because Joseph is wily? I mean, that story where he's sitting there, in the hearing room or audience chamber or whatever, and his brothers are prostrating themselves before him, facing starvation, and Joseph is sitting there engaging in some sort of sadistic glee, making them squirm.
I told you I'd get you, sucker.
Yeah, that's not, I don't think that story was propounded for those ancient peoples to say, what a great guy. They were propounded to say, what an ass. Don't right. be like him.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stories in there, and of course, now Zachariah Sitchin will tell you, that they were these alien brothers, and one of them was the vengeful god, and one of them was the, the creator god, and he warned Noah, and he warned Lot, and yada yada yada. So, who knows? But there is that, my point being, in the Old Testament, there seems to be a vengeful, jealous God, but then there seems to be one that's more benevolent and cares more about his creation. So you get a little bit of a duality going there.
Indeed. Well, Jethro, I tell you what, it's great talking to you this evening, and you know, just and among other things, thanks for bringing up the story from the Charleston Mall. That thing's appalling, and you know, it's a it's literally a blot on, you know, on our reputation in this state. But of course, just to finish that off real quick, you know why it is that the mall is crawling with cops, right?
No, I do not know.
Because there is public housing installation within a few blocks of it.
Hmm.
So all those terrified white bread mall workers are all uncomfortable, you know, because those people are coming into the mall and we can't stop them.
Hmm. Knowing somebody's gonna bust a cap on, huh?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we're gonna have a gang war right in the middle of Bennigan's.
Yeah, well, you can't live your life in fear, I'll tell you what. So I just, the Charleston Mall, so I don't know. The Charleston place, they've had some bad luck. I mean, you know, it was 2 months ago they were pursuing some guy, knew where he lived. The sergeant told him, said, man, you know, I know where the guy lives. I'll get him tomorrow. They continue pursuing him. They get him in a cul-de-sac, so he decides he's going to ram him and, you know, ram his way out, Dukes of Hazzard style. One of the Charleston officers is running up to the car firing, and he goes down. Friendly fire, they shoot him and the driver of the car.
Yeah, and bear in mind, this is the same Charleston Police Department, and I think this is the overall point of it. You know, you were there at the rally a week ago today, and you heard the blaring truck horns. Well, those were on the city streets of Charleston, and the Charleston police did absolutely nothing
right
to intervene.
Yeah, I know Danny Jones.
Well, then you probably know more than I do.
I think it was that was the governor intervened on that too.
Yeah, but bear in mind, we also go back to, what was it, October the 14th, maybe, something like that. You know, that Army Corps of Engineering hearing in Charleston, where they sent a little tiny contingent of Charleston police to handle a violent mob of about 750 pro-coal people.
Yeah, I would say that's, you know, that was the mayor doing the governor a little favor there, so...
Yeah, let's put the fear of God in these tree huggers, and maybe they'll quit showing up.
Right. Well, politicians gotta, you know, they gotta scratch each other's back and stuff, and the line between Republican and Democrat kind of blurs once they get up there.
Well, it's not even blurred where Joe Manchin's concerned. I will never forget back in the, you may remember the guy too, back in the day of terrestrial broadcasting. Remember Clyde that used to call from Fayette County?
Clyde.
He called in one evening, talking about Joe Manchin, and he said, Bob, I've been working on the Democratic Party campaigns in West Virginia since God was a baby. And he said, you know, he said I was there. He said I was there when A. James ran. I was there when A. James and the Manchin family put together Democrats for Archmore. He said, I know what the Manchin family did, putting together Democrats for Underwood. And then he said, please understand, Bob, that no Manchin has ever voted for any Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin.
Yeah, that was pretty low, because they did show up dirty, dirty, dirty. Terribly dirty.
Yeah. So to suggest that Joe Manchin, and this is not any sort of defense of the Democratic Party in West Virginia, because it's largely indefensible. But to suggest that Joe Manchin is a Democrat in West Virginia is simply an exercise in a sort of self-delusion.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who breaks bread every year with West Virginians for life.
Right, right. Yeah, he's always going on all the motorcycle rides and... I assume that you start off idealistically and stuff, but then after you were, you know, sell your soul to the timber and the gas and the coal companies so you can have your little planes and your little toys and your future and hope that you can become the next senator and stuff, I just, you know, where do you go? Where do you turn sour on that deal? Is you know, the money? Is it the money that poisons you, or the lust for power, or?
I think it depends on the individual, the individual involved. I don't think it's about money for Joe Manchin. I think it's about power.
Yeah.
I think it's about vindication of the Manchin family name. I think it's about setting himself up as the capo di tutti capo of politics in West Virginia. He wants to replace Robert Byrd as the, you know, the be all and end all, because, you know, Robert Byrd is the only man in West Virginia who has the power to call down Joe Manchin. And by God, Robert Byrd, for as much as I've criticized him in recent years, he called down Joe Manchin with that Cole statement he made a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, he stepped up to the plate, and of course they're trying to say, well, now there's some, especially on the Nutcase Radio here, they're trying to say, well, Byrd's too feeble to do that. He didn't say that. He didn't write that. That is his staff. They're taking over for him now, and they're advancing their liberal views, which is hogwash. You know,
he might be physically feeble, but there ain't nothing wrong with that brain.
No. He's is smarter than all these nutcase complainers put together. And Byrd is still sharp, and he knows, you know.
Every night, Joe Manchin falls asleep saying, please let him die, God, please let him die.
Right. And Byrd's, you know, Byrd's got nothing to lose. He's got, you know, he knows he's, time's running out, and, I think he's trying to make, trying to do as much good as he can. Now, he was right on with the Iraq War. He's right on with this, mountaintop removal foolishness. And for the governor and them to try to say, well, we need a clarification of what Senator Byrd was saying. Is he against coal or not?
You know what? I think Joe and Bill Rainey of the Coal Association, that whole dirty crowd, needs a clarification from Senator Byrd. And it needs to start. I tried to explain this to you in plain language, so let me start over. Listen, dumbass.
Right. Well, Bill Rainey, I mean, he's a paid shill anyway, and they're going to, you know, they're going to try to spread as much fear. I mean, they've already created their own army of reflector-striped, uniformed, almost thugs with the miners who 40 years ago were on, were on our side, on the union side, the labor side. Now they've become pawns of big coal and stuff, and non-union. And they're so afraid they're going to lose their jobs, and it's just, I don't think it's going to happen that way. They can go to work in an underground mine, or they can do something else and stop all this destruction.
Exactly. But
Zachary,
yeah. Well, it's madness, Jethro. It is indeed madness.
Madness is madness is the call today, but... But it's our job to be to try to act like sane individuals in a world of madness. You have no other choice.
You're
go mad yourself.
Well, that's about the yeah.
I only admit to being about half crazy, so that other half's still fighting. I'm not going down.
Well, if you're half crazy, Jethro, what the heck does that say about me?
It's madness, buddy.
It's not a state of mind. It's a way of life.
Right, right. So, you know, as long as it's a good crazy, keep fighting a good fight, Bob, and I'll be calling back.
All right, I'll be listening for you.
All right, buddy.
You take care, Jethro.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye now. You know,
we
didn't hear from Jethro for a long, long time, and it's so wonderful to hear from him again. I there is no way except for me to tell you that for a long, long time, Jethro there was absolutely an exercise in misery for the wing nuts at WWNR in Beckley. I mean, he beat them. He beat him again. He beat him to pieces. He took him out and stomped him on the grounds, ideologically speaking, and made them thank him for it and come back for more. Not joking. Jethro was almost at one point, Jethro was pretty much, and this goes back to before, you know, before my show started there, he was a one-man resistance squad to right-wing nuttery in southern West Virginia. And it was magnificent to behold. So, you know, just so you'll know who you're dealing with when you hear from Jethro. By the way, I love getting emails like this. I just had the briefest note from Sandra. And she said, Bob, I caught that Claudius reference. Too funny. You know, because I referenced Julius Caesar and Claudius, who was noted for having a stammer. But you know, I love it. I love it when little things, you know, when little things like that, that, you know, I throw little things like that out there against the wall and somebody catches it. It's a beautiful thing. I wanna, if I may, in the time that remains. Well, wait. Before I do that, this is the 14th of December, right? Right. So tomorrow is, by definition, the 15th. And tomorrow, December the 15th, the AstroTurf group and all of its subsidiary bagger, birther, deather, tenther, booger, the booger eaters of the teabag movement, are going to, in their own words, storm Senate offices. Freedom Works is that AstroTurf outfit that is headed by it's the Dick Army headed by Dick Army. And they're going to storm Senate offices tomorrow for what they call, and they say they're going to stay there until they force us to leave. Hopefully that will mean arrest. And they say that they are going to, and this is a quote, play out the role of patients waiting for treatment in government-controlled medical facilities. And then they go on and they say they're going to stay there till they force us to leave, and we are going to flex our muscle and hold the line in our fight against the government taking over of health care. I'm guessing Mrs. Kelly would have appreciated if there'd been a little bit of government health care out there for her. But that doesn't matter to the booger-eating baggers, birthers, deathers, and tenthers. Yeah, here's their little email. It is time once again to flex our muscle and exert that influence to hold the line in our fight against the government takeover of health care. The Senate is busy working on the details of a government-run health care bill, and they would like to pass it as quickly as possible. Some of them are under the false idea that we've given up and gone away just because they haven't heard much from us in the past few days. So here's the plan. We call this plan government waiting rooms. The intention is to go inside the Senate offices and hallways and play out the role of patients waiting for treatment in government-controlled medical hospitals. As the day goes on, some of us will pretend to die from our untreated illness, sick, and collapse on the floor. Many of us plan to stay there until they force us to leave. I hope they get the same treatment that we got last summer when we went up to D.C. for the historic first hearing on mountaintop removal. You remember that story, don't you? You remember how Officer Friendly came out, with the shaved head, you know, deadly serious. This is my Senate office building, and while in my Senate office building, you will display the degree of respect that is to be reasonably afforded to a building of the U.S. Senate and of the people of the United States. You will not slouch against the wall. You will not sit upon the floor. You will not lean with one shoulder upon the wall. You will stand respectfully in line. It is called line standing and not line sitting, because you will stand. If I catch you sitting or leaning, I will arrest you, because that has been deemed a protest of actions taking place inside this United States government building. Am I clear? Do you understand me? Yes, Drill Sergeant. So these clueless booger eaters are going to drop dead in Senate offices and in hallways, or pretend to. Tomorrow, I will be very, very, very curious to see whether or not they are subjected to the same standard of conduct that conservatively dressed, nonviolent, peaceful, liberal hill folk were subjected to. I mean, isn't that just a little pathetic, running around the Senate, dropping on the floor like you just been slain in the spirit down to the Assembly of God Church? I mean, really. But we'll see, because, you know, that's tomorrow, and hopefully by tomorrow night we will have some sort of an answer. It is Moran Monday, and what would it be in Moran Monday? It just wouldn't be fair not to mention Smokey Joe Barton, re-pig-licking from Texas. You remember when Michelle Bachmann made her impassioned plea from the floor of the House of Representatives that CO2 is good for you because it's natural? And I do believe it was Oregon's Representative Earl Blumenauer who then handed her her own ass. Pardon me, ma'am, is this yours? Well, Smokey Joe Barton's back with the same theme. Might as well enjoy this.
You know, I was here when the Clean Air Act amendments were passed in the early 90s. We were very clear in that legislation that we were regulating certain criteria of pollutants. We talked about CO2 and decided that was not something that should be covered by the Clean Air Act. It's not designed to. The limits in the Clean Air Act...
Wait a minute. Strap in. I think the fun's about to start.
Don't apply to CO2, and again, CO2 is odorless, colorless, tasteless. It's not a threat to human health in terms of being exposed to it. We create...
Wait. Okay, Moran moment. Ask a coal miner. Not one of these quarry workers, not one of these high explosives workers, not one of these earth-moving machinery operators, demolition workers. Ask a real coal miner if CO2 is dangerous to your health. Here's a hint. The answer is yes. So let's back up for just a little extra dose of Moran and let him start and finish.
Odorless, colorless, tasteless. It's not a threat to human health in terms of being exposed to it. We create it as we talk back and forth. And if you go beyond that, on a net basis, there's ample evidence that warming generically, however it's caused, is a net benefit to mankind. So I think the first serious lawsuit brought against it, it'll fall on its face.
Yeah. warming of the planet is good for mankind. Let's ask. Oh, I don't know. Let's ask folks from Fiji. Yeah. Let's ask Leah Wickham, a young woman from Fiji, who, speaking at Copenhagen, broke down as she told the conference that she will see her homeland disappear beneath the waves if we do not act now. This is what she said. All the hopes of my generation rest on Copenhagen. Mohamed Nasheed is the president of the Maldives, quickly disappearing beneath the flood. And he said, the last generation of humans went to the moon. This generation of humans needs to decide if it wants to stay alive on planet Earth. But you see, Fijians and Maldivians aren't pretty and pink like people are supposed to be in Joe Barton's world. No, they aren't. And because they aren't pretty and pink, they're another member of that invisible class that the Republican Party simply cannot see. And then there's this. There's this from Ian Fry, the delegate from Tuvalu, to the UN Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen. I almost hesitate to play this because it is heartrending for anyone with a heart. But it's just a fantasy to the pink people in the Republican Party. Just a fantasy.
The entire population of Tuvalu lives below two meters above sea level. The highest point above sea level in the entire nation of Tuvalu is only 4 meters. Madam President, we are not naive to the circumstances and political considerations that are before us. It appears that we are waiting for some senators in the US Congress to conclude before we can consider this issue properly. It's an irony of the modern world that the fate of the world is being determined by some senators in the US Congress. We note that President Obama recently went to Norway to pick up a Nobel Prize, rightly or wrongly. But we can suggest that for him to honour this Nobel Prize, he should address the greatest threat to humanity that we have before us, climate change, and the greatest threat to security, climate change. So I make a strong plea that we give proper consideration to a conclusion at this meeting that leads to two legally binding agreements. Madam President, this is not just an issue of Tuvalu. Pacific Island countries, Kiribati, Marshall Islands, Maldives, in the Bahamas, Haiti, Bahamas, Grenada, Sao Tome and Principe in the West Africa, and all the LDCs, Bhutan, Laos, Mali, Uganda, Senegal, Timor-Leste, and millions of other people around this world are affected enormously by climate change. This is not just Tuvalu. Over the last few days, I've received calls from all over the world offering faith and hope that we can come to a meaningful conclusion on this issue. Madam President, this is not an ego trip for me. I have refused to undertake media interviews because I don't think this is just an issue of an ego trip for me. I'm just merely a humble and insignificant employee of the Environment Department of the Government of Tuvalu. And as a humble servant of the Government of Tuvalu, I have to make a strong plea to you that we consider this matter properly. I don't want to cause embarrassment to you or the government, but I want to have this issue considered properly. I clearly want to have the leaders put before them an option for considering a legally binding agreement for them to sign on at this meeting. I make this as a strong and impassioned plea. We've had our proposal on the table for 6 months. 6 months. It's not the last 2 days of this meeting. I woke this morning and I was crying, and that's not easy for a grown man to admit. The fate of my country rests in your hands. Thank you.
How do you ignore that? Well, I'll tell you how. If you are sufficiently compensated by the fossil fuels industry, you simply pretend that you cannot see him, that you cannot hear him. And there's Ian Fry, and he's appropriately pink, but he talks funny, which probably means he's a socialist. Or a socialist fascist Obama bot. I don't think so. And yet, batshit crazy old men and women in the United States Senate hold the power of life and death over entire gatherings of human population living at 4 meters above sea level. I would advise that Mr. Fry not take any sort of a look at the Mississippi Gulf Coast, which is actually below sea level, because if he does, he will see the fate of his own nation and see how it is that monsters like Joe Barton, like Jim Demented, like Tom Coburn, like Jim Inhofe, regard his and his loved ones' so-called right to life. They are, in a word, invisible. So that is Moran Monday on the Horn. I hope you will join us tomorrow evening and share with us the news of the day. Share your thoughts, your ideas. Just quickly, in terms of how we deal with Joe Lieberman, our buddy Luke says, how about we try this, Bob? We get a senator to put a hold on all the foreign aid heading to Israel for, say, about a year or until Senator Joe sits down and shuts up. Not a bad idea, but it's probably too late. I'm being informed by both Gene and Sandra that the Democrats have caved again. Raw story reporting. Senate Democrats have ceded yet more crucial components of President Obama's health reforms, dropping proposals for both a public option and Medicare buy-in, apparently caving to pushback from Republicans and so-called centrist Democrats, what a phony word, according to a published report. The general consensus was that we shouldn't make the perfect the enemy of the good. God, I hate that phrase. And in order to get all the insurance reforms accomplished and a number of other good things in the bill, Senator Evan Bayh of Indiana told reporters, according to Bloomberg, dropping the Medicare expansion would be necessary to get the 60 votes. God rest you gently. Well, Sandra says, wow, I'm pretty much done. Yeah, so am I, Sandra. And God rest you gently, Mrs. Kelly. And the next 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 Mrs. Kelly. And all the Mrs. Kellys of the United States who will die in agony and ignominy because of the unyielding greed of people like filthy Joe Lieberman. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to all of you who helped support the Horn. We've had a couple of kind donations in the last couple of days, kind contributions, and they are forever appreciated. It's the 14th of December. We're still not at $1,000. We're trying to get through December now. We're not even talking about January anymore. But thank you. Thank you for those of you who do struggle to keep this happening. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know, CRMW.net and ColeRiverWind.org. Their bravery knows no season and knows no bounds. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
And a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Hooray, hooray, hooray! Step right up! Get your place in line for the very, very thin price of nothing at all. You too can enter the tent of horrors and gaze at the freak that therein lie beyond. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Moran Monday comes but once a week, and this is that once of the week that it comes, okay? Yeah. It is. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, but this time I guess there's a little bit of an indictment for me in Moran Monday, because apparently I'm one of the Morans. And you may be too. Sorry. Because I was under the impression, legitimately held, that Joe Lieberman was only a senator, only a single member of a 100-person body. I was not under the impression that, which appears to be reality, that he is actually Almighty God of all of us. That he has the power, in fact, literally, of life and death over us. What a bunch of morons we are, huh? A little frustrating. A little bit. If you don't know what that to which I allude,
It would be the fact that Holy Joe Lieberman, Senator Droopy, as it were.
I don't think that you miserable plebs deserve any health insurance.
Has declared that he will, by God, filibuster any health insurance reform bill that has a public option or even a Medicare buy-in in it. Wow. I guess he just told Barack Obama where to get off. That one. I guess Holy Joe just told Barack Obama exactly what he thinks of having, you know, one of those. Shvatza. In the White House. I don't know. I don't know, John. How does that droopy dog MF forget to have so much sway? Oof. Oh, God. Joe Lieberman. Oh. But it does no good. I beg the sky god for a big old lightning bolt that would just... Bzzzt. Didn't happen. And we're the morons. And you know, we're the morons of Moran Monday in more ways than one. I offer you, as a matter of fact, I offer you this explanation... A very recent one, as a matter of fact, from the White House. Sit down. You're not going to like this. Today, that rag of dubious provenance, Politico, reported that the White House is pressuring... Huh? Wait, whose side are they on? What is pressuring Spineless Harry Reid to, quote-unquote, cut a deal with Holy Joe Lieberman? And that deal would involve dropping any public option or Medicare buy-in from the bill in order to win Holy Joe's support. The White House then issued a statement saying the report is inaccurate. How about that? Now, we pay attention to the language around here, don't we? The report is inaccurate is a distinctly different statement from the report is incorrect or the report is wrong. The quote is the report.